Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and a very warm welcome to the Dr. Reddy's Laboratories Limited first quarter earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star followed by zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Shaunak Savla. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah. A very good morning and good evening to all of you, and thank you for joining us today for the Dr. Reddy's earnings conference call for the first quarter ended 30th June 2023. Earlier during the day, we have released our results and the same are also posted on our website. We are conducting a live webcast of this call and a transcript shall be made available on our website soon. The discussion and analysis in this call will be based on the IFRS consolidated financial statements. To discuss the business performance and outlook, we have the leadership team of Dr. Reddy's, comprising Mr. G.V. Prasad, our CEO, Mr. Abhijit Mukherjee, our COO, Mr. Soumen Chakravarty, our CFO, Mr. Anil Nambudripad, who is the head of our proprietary products business, and the investor relations team. Please note that today's call is a copyrighted material of Dr. Reddy's and cannot be rebroadcasted or attributed in press or media outlets without the company's express written consent. Before we proceed on the call, I would like to remind everyone that the safe harbor language contained in today's press release also pertains to the conference call and the webcast. Now I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Soumen Chakravarty, our CFO.
Thank you, Sana. Greetings to everyone. Let me begin with key financial highlights. For this section, all the amounts are translated into US dollar at a convenience translation rate of 64.62, which is the rate as of 30th June 2017. Consolidated revenues for the quarter are ₹3,316 crores, or $513 million. Grew 3% year-on-year, but declined 7% sequentially. Sequential decline is primarily attributable to the lower sales in our domestic formulation business due to channel destocking during GST transition and quarterly fluctuations in our PSAI business. Revenues from global generic segment are $425 million and PSAI segment is $72 million. Consolidated gross profit margin for the quarter is at 51.6%. This quarter we had some very good launches in North America generics business. However, considering that most were follow-on launches, their contribution in this quarter is low. There were few key external market dynamics responsible for pulling down the margin against our more recent benchmark. These are one, incremental price erosion in the base business in US. In addition to increased competitive intensity in some of the key molecules, enhanced customer consolidation late erosion played out beyond our earlier estimate. Two, GST transition impact. This transition was characterized by significant reduction in the channel offtake and also higher returns. In order to ensure adequate product availability in the marketplace, we had to make certain one-time interventions in the form of selective incentivization, public compensation for any loss incurred by them with respect to the channel inventory. These channel interventions adversely impacted the margins. Three, adverse impact of manufacturing overhead deleverage. During the quarter, we had lower reported sales, partly as a consequence of GST implementation and partly on account of quota gating in other businesses. This factor should get normalized going forward. And four, adverse movement in currency rates. During the quarter, the US dollar net delivered rate depreciated against the rupee. The USD rate is now stabilized around 64 to 64.5 range. SG&A spend, including amortization for the quarter, is ₹1,176 crores, or $182 million, a decrease of 4% year-on-year due to reduction in spend on remediation-related expenses. We continue to explore revenues to optimize the spending. R&D expense for the quarter are at 507 crores rupees or $79 million, representing 15.3% to revenues. This spend is in line with the ongoing set of development activities as planned. EBITDA for the quarter stands at rupees 336 crore, which is $52 million and is around 10% of the revenue. Our net debt to equity ratio stands at 0.29 as on 30th June 2017. The effective tax rate is around 23.5% for the quarter, and we anticipate it to be in the range of 23 to 25% for the full year. Key balance sheet highlights are as follows. Our operating working capital increased by rupees 283 crore or $44 million during this quarter, primarily due to increase in receivables in North America generics business. We remain focused on optimizing the working capital cycle. Capital expenditure for the quarter was rupees 272 crore or $42 million. Foreign currency cash flow hedges for the next 9 months in the form of derivatives for US dollars are approximately $240 million, largely hedged around the range of rupees 66.3 to rupees 68.7 to the dollar. In addition, we have balance sheet hedges of $374 million. We also have foreign currency cash flow hedges of 900 million rubles at the rate of rupees 1.135 to the ruble, maturing over next 9 months. With this, I now request Abhijit to take through the key business highlights.
Thank you, Soumen. Greetings to everybody, and I extend a warm welcome to you on this earnings conference call. Let me take you through some of the business highlights for each of our key markets. Please note that in the section, all references to numbers are in respective local currencies. Our North America revenues for the quarter are at $230 million. On QOQ basis, we have managed to sustain the overall business and, in fact, grew marginally despite multiple challenges. Our base business witnessed pricing pressures driven by enhanced channel consolidation and increased competitive intensity on a couple of key assets, azacitidine and valgan cyclovir. With further consolidation among buyers, consortia, we expect the adverse pricing environment to persist going forward. We had a fairly reasonable quarter in terms of new product with four launches. G-Vitorin has been a successful launch with strong contracted market share. We also had doxorubicin liposomal injection, our first complex injectable. We are ramping up market share, and since most of these are follow-on launches, we expect to peak in terms of value contribution over the next couple of quarters. With respect to the pipeline, we continue to work with the agency on the approval of our assets and remain optimistic on 2 to 3 launches per quarter. However, quality overhang at our injectable facility may impact approval timelines for a few of our key assets. Continuing on pure generics, our Europe business is fairly stable now and well poised to deliver a profitable growth on the back of new product launches and traction in new markets. Our emerging markets business is on track to a gradual recovery. Russia business grew 31% YOY in local currency. During the quarter, we had our first shipment of rituximab as part of secured share under the national tender. Ex-rituximab, the growth is in line with expectations. We continue to focus on improving productivity and augmenting the pipeline. Ex-Russia, the performance of the other markets were also in line with our expectations. We are well on track to expand geographic presence, leveraging our institutional business portfolio and biosimilars. Commercialization of biosimilars across emerging markets has started to gain meaningful traction. We remain optimistic of building on this momentum further. India business revenues are at 469 crores and declined 10% YOY, 18% QOQ. The nation implemented one of the largest and significant transitions to a progressive taxation regime in this quarter. We are witnessing a lot of transition challenges, and we are working towards those. There was an evident disruption in the normal flow of activities, and we had our share of impact. As discussed earlier, the decline in domestic business is resulting from channel destocking due to transition to the GST regime. This obviously had a sizable impact on our quarterly performance. There are some teething issues still being resolved, and it will take some time for all the industry participants to return to normalcy. Subject to this, we continue to focus on productivity improvements and portfolio augmentation. PFAI business posted revenues of $72 million. Our efforts are directed towards building a healthy order book. Our proprietary products business, we continue to execute our strategy of expanding Zembrace and Cernivo. Over the past quarters, we had several successful initiatives to accelerate volume growth. Effective this quarter, we have started focusing on more on improving the net realization through optimal payer coverage. On R&D front, the pipeline is continuing to grow. Overall progress on R&D program milestones are on track. This concludes my part. Now I will hand over to Prasad for his comments.
Thank you, Abhijit. Thank you, Soumen. From the discussions, from the preceding discussions, you have an idea of the challenges that we face today. Delays in approvals, additional competition, regulatory actions have all combined to put significant pressure on our performance. Given these circumstances, the management of Dr. Reddy's have done a strategic review of the various businesses and initiatives, and they've developed three high priorities for the team. The first one is, of course, strengthening our manufacturing and quality system. Our first priority is to ensure that our management system, that our manufacturing systems meet the highest level of quality and compliance. We will need to modernize some of our infrastructure, systematically implement our new quality management system, and automate some of the critical manufacturing and quality-related processes. To accomplish this, a number of initiatives have been taken up across all locations, and this would take us a few more quarters to complete. The second priority is to revitalize growth. Our efforts to deliver a healthy pipeline of products enabling sustainable high performance are on, and we are focused on accelerating the development of our complex generics portfolio, and also making efforts to ensure that the approvals come in time through appropriate risk management and proactive measures to deal with possible deficiencies. We are also registering our assets in several countries beyond the U.S. in emerging markets to drive growth. This is our second priority. The third priority is really to look at our cost structure and optimize it. Over the years, our fixed cost structures have outpaced our growth in revenue. And we feel this must be corrected now to enable us to compete effectively in the marketplace. We've embarked on a systematic exercise to transition to a leaner and flexible cost structure, focus on areas such as network rationalization, improving plant operating efficiency, R&D site optimization and productivity, as well as portfolio rationalization will have the potential to deliver significant savings. And we've already made a firm start, and we expect to see some results starting this year onwards. With this, I conclude my commentary and hand it back to you, Sanok.
Hello. So we can have the Q&A session now.
Sure, sir. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. All participants are requested to limit their questions to two per participant. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We'll take the first question from the line of Prakash Agarwal from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Just trying to understand the gross margin, you did mention about the India GST impact. Just trying to understand without that impact, what would have been the gross margin, given the fact that we have started to see, limited competition products in the U.S.?
Yeah, I basically spoke about 4 points, which had overall contributed on a year-on-year basis about 450 to 500 basis point reduction in gross margin. So if you see relatively, the maximum impact comes from the North America generics price erosion. And then second comes from the GST. This is a specific quarter impact that we feel. And of course, the third one is that manufacturing overhead deleverage, which is directly attributable to the level of sales. As the sales increase, definitely that gets normalized. And the fourth, which is much lesser impact, is due to the currency rate.
So if we exclude the GST impact, sir, what could have been the normalized, because that's something which is really one-off?
That as well as the manufacturing overhead deleverage, both would be, you know, really quarter specific kind of thing.
Okay.
So we will not be able to exactly give what will be the what would have been the thing, but it will be grossly in the range of around 53 to 54 in that.
Okay. And we would assume, or is it fair to assume that this is the base case now, given the fact that the approvals and launches have begun during the quarter, so you'll have full quarter impact going forward. So this should ideally improve going forward.
Yeah, assuming no further erosions takes place.
And the erosion is in line with what you have guided in the past? I mean, what you've seen in the past?
It is more than what we would have expected, and in the annual report we mentioned that we felt based on last year there was a huge erosion which has happened, which was much higher than the previous year. So we felt that this year would be more calibrated, but it is more than our expectation or our estimate. Erosion has been more both because of the intensity of competition as well as the the customer consolidation between the three players having 82-85% of the market. And this is the quarter when most of the RFPs happened from different, customers, so that impact is felt. You know, we could not have felt it, say, in April and May. Mostly it happens in June. So then we understand that our initial estimates were lesser than what has actually happened in actual.
So any broad range, 12% plus minus, or?
Yeah, it is in double digits. Two major assets I mentioned itself account for about 11 million QOQ impact, GVDASA and GVAL side.
Perfect, thanks. I have more questions, I'll join back.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Kumar Saurav from Motilal Oswal Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. So, sir, as you mentioned, just a follow-up, as you mentioned that in only the month of June, we could realize the impact of renegotiation of RFPs. So does that mean that the full quarter impact we will be seeing in the second quarter?
No, some of them had a retrospective effect as well as from 1st of April.
Okay, so going forward, if no further pressure comes from here onwards, ideally the margin should improve, X of GST I'm talking about, US business. Okay.
You cannot take it for granted. Normally it is a practice of annual RFP, but one cannot take it for granted.
I'm assuming that, you know, because we have good product approvals which have come and which are expected to come in coming quarters. So taking that into account, we should see some kind of respite.
Hopefully.
And sir, India business, sir, in the current quarter, are we seeing, how confident are we that we will be able to recoup the impact which we witnessed in 1Q?
We are seeing some recovery. Confidence level is there that whatever GST impact one has seen, it is should be limited to Q1.
Should be limited, and we should see that full recovery coming in quarter two.
I can't comment on full recovery. There will be recovery.
Okay.
Yeah, overall, I think couple of quarters. I think it's the current run rate is very good. It is a temporary hit, unlike the headwinds of pricing in North America. So I think shouldn't be that big a concern.
Sure. So, sir, you know, as you mentioned that there were a couple of one-offs and this U.S. business price erosion was there. So how should we look at what is the normalized margins going forward we should look at from second half FY18 onwards?
I wouldn't comment on that. These are, difficult to sort of predict. I think the key issue is, I think, getting the approvals and launches. That would be the probably the most impacting factor. The headwinds which are beyond our control, we can't do much, and there isn't too much of a point trying to predict that. Overall, what we are saying is it has been a little more intense than what we thought. And yes, I do agree that the you know, some of the juicy assets have already wear out. But hopefully, let's see whether it stabilizes a little bit or not.
And in terms of growth strategy, the high priorities which you talked about, revitalizing growth and cost control, is there any change in strategy in terms of focus area, in terms of geographic focus? So U.S. has been our key focus area. And now, given the challenges which we are seeing, is it fair that to assume that, you know, the focus should be more in other geographies as well? Or is, in terms of geographic focus, we still continue to focus on U.S. and India as our core markets?
So, I mean, the core markets are beyond U.S. and India. U.S., Russia, some select emerging markets, large emerging markets, and India.
Sure.
The focus on U.S. continues. The most of the assets that we are developing are targeted towards the U.S., but we will leverage them in Europe as well as in all other parts of the world. We have increased our globalization of select high-value assets, including biosimilars.
Yes.
So to that extent, we are seeing more activity aimed at the emerging markets in the medium term. So, but, you know, that's not going to be a hedge against the U.S. The U.S. is such a large market that any other market or even a collection of markets cannot replace the growth that we hope to see in the U.S.
And sir, do we...
Kumar, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I would request you to come back in queue for any follow-up questions. Participants, you are requested to limit your questions to two per participant. Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Neha Manpuria from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thanks so much for taking my questions. My first question is on the other expense, SG&A expense, excluding, you know, depreciation and amortization. The base seems pretty high for the quarter. Is there some incentive payments, etc., in the quarter, or is this the new base, new normal for SG&A?
If you see year on year, there has been a decline in the SG&A. Quarter on quarter, in the last quarter, if you remember, we have talked about certain specific, long-term incentives and others, which were earlier accounted for, but was reversed because we didn't pay due to non-performance. So that way, the previous quarter, manpower cost would have been lower than normal. Now, what you see this quarter is a fair indication after all the increment costs and everything has been built into manpower cost. But our endeavor internally is to continue to improve on these and reduce further.
So for all purposes, this is the new base for cost going forward for the time being?
We'll say this will be something for which we need to improve further quarter on quarter.
And, sir, when you mentioned our efforts to sort of improve our cost structure to make it more lean, and therefore you're expecting certain synergies, is there a number for the synergy or for this savings that can be expected from our cost control over the medium term? Probably not for FY18, but how much do you think we can improve our costs by?
So we are working on this project right now. It's mm-hmm. going to be quite substantial. I don't have an exact number, but it's hundreds of crores kind of possibility to take costs away. Multiple hundreds of crores.
Okay. And my second question is on the proprietary business. You know, the out-licensing agreement that we announced yesterday for DFA-02. I mean, is there a change in the way we are looking at the proprietary business, instead of commercializing these assets ourselves?
Well, Ranil on the call.
Yeah.
Ranil answer this.
Yeah, I'm on the call. Yeah. So, do you want to comment first or you want me to take over?
Broadly, I'm saying that we are looking at more differentiated assets and assets more aligned with our sales force. And the headline mm-hmm. message, but I'll leave it to you to give it more color on it. Anil,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so specifically this particular asset that we licensed is a high-value asset, but it was within a therapeutic area that we are not focusing on at this point in time. It's
mm-hmm.
for the acute care hospital markets. So we felt that it is best developed at the hands of somebody else, and we believe that CHD Biosciences is a capable partner to develop this particular asset. The value of this asset is tremendously high, but we made a conscious decision to focus on two areas, neurology and dermatology, hence this divestiture.
Okay. Are there any other such assets that we are looking at in the near term on the proprietary side, or now most of the launches would be, you know, commercialized by Dr. Reddy's?
There are a couple of other assets that we believe are high value and do not fall within the purview of our strategic focus. And there are discussions ongoing about partnering those as well. But we cannot disclose at this time.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Anubhav Agarwal from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. One question is on Shikhapuram plant. Just want you to understand that once this plant comes back, once it gets the EIR, how much of PSI sales is impacted because this plant has a warning letter right now, which gets recovered? Second, how much is the unabsorbed fixed cost which is impacting our cost right now? So just trying to understand how much benefit we get once plant comes back.
So the warning letter never prevented us from marketing the products which were there already. So what it will have is some of the assets for the future approval. Some we have tech transferred and not relevant anymore, but for the future approvals, it will have an impact. As far as you know, unused or overheads which are now unutilized, I wouldn't make a very material impact. I think for sure the injectable plant, which we have I mentioned, is more important in terms of the launches, and it's necessary for us to work towards getting it back.
Yeah, which is, I was thinking more in terms of whether it had any impact on the PSI business, not just this quarter, but in general, because.
So it will be, some impact will be there. The flow will improve of products. And we've been heavily focused on remediation. We're trying to now focus on efficiencies also. So there will be some impact, but it won't be very huge.
Okay, that's helpful. Second question on the PSA business itself. Now, the composition of the business this quarter was very different from the trend that we have seen so far, where sales in Europe has significantly declined and sales in India has significantly picked up. On both counts, if you can explain that. And secondly, if this trend were to, let's say, remain, is when you sell a PSA sales in India versus Europe, are the margins very different in the two categories or similar?
So this is a B2B business, and I wouldn't recommend, I wouldn't suggest that we read too much into regional sales from PSI. These are, you know, depending on customers who picks what when. What is more important is the last point which I mentioned, that we were very focused on a lot of remediation activities which sort of certainly had some disruptive effect on manufacturing and supplies. I think we would we can focus much more now on supply chain, managing the supply chain better. So to that extent, I think it will be certainly beneficial and move northwards from here, I guess.
Okay. Just last question on the U.S. business. You quantified the price erosion year on year. Abhijit, can you just give an idea sequentially as well the impact of price erosion in the U.S. business?
Sequentially is not a right way to look at, but I'll give you a broad study which we did in terms of, you know, top 8 to 9 generic companies. If you add their erosion, and you can get it from the IMS, and add it up and then take an average, that will give you the industry, because, you know, a certain quarter, you know, we could be very high, other companies may be low, and could be vice versa in subsequent quarters. So overall, the trend for the last 8 quarters we studied, and it has been a fairly steady upward moving percentage. You know, 2 years back, it was probably 5-6. It is, you know, it's trending you know, between 10 to 20 right now. Now, having said that, look, whether this whole consolidation also has broadly, I think we've more or less seen the end of it can't go any further between three players, 85% of the market share. So whether it will plateau out or bait, time will tell.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Nimish Mehta from Research Delta Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking the question. On the India business and specifically on the impact of GST, I just wanted a few clarification. One, obviously we got impacted because of the, lower sales because of these topics. But you also mentioned about we giving some compensation to the distributors for the kind of losses. So is there, first obviously whether my understanding is correct, and if yes, what is that amount or can you quantify that?
Specifically not, I don't think, but there was certainly, in the confusion, in the transition, certainly some amount. I mean, is it very significant? No. But yes, there was, some effort to sort of keep the stocks moving. We didn't want also the retail sales to run dry, and that would have been apart from anything else, which would have meant secondary sales loss, which was not correct to, sort of in this confusion. So I wouldn't be very much, but yes, there was some.
Okay, understood. But that's not material, right? That is what I understand.
Not really significant, no.
Okay. And second, on the U.S. business, you mentioned about 2 to 3 launches per quarter here. Any guidance about how many high-value launches, specifically launches like Copaxone, will be efficient?
Difficult to say. 2 to 3 numbers would happen, and I think you're very right. I mean, what is the quality of 2 to 3 would decide everything. There are a few assets. There are also a few concerns because of the injectable site delay. But the numbers are there, and there are, a few assets without getting into specifics. Things go okay, then we may see a few good launches.
Quantify that number, as in how many people we can see, as in 2, 3, 3, 4,
yeah, not that. Yeah, we just can't because, the uncertainty is because of intellectual property aspects of it, and, FDA's approval timelines are not in our control.
Okay, great. If I may squeeze in one, just wanted to know the fate of our biosimilar strategy now that Merck is opting out of the JV. So any thoughts that would be?
Well, Fresenius, who is the new owner of this business, is very motivated to continue, and we've had our meetings, and it is going quite well. So they've acquired this business from Merck. They paid a lot of money, so we believe that they're very committed to building this business going forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Sameer Baisiwala from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good evening, everyone. Abhi, can you update us on the progress with Dovada with 13 observations? What's the way forward, and would it require a second re-inspection?
This would require a secondary inspection, Sameer. So the observations were significant. We responded, but it will require another inspection. We are working towards it, and normally in a one-inch site, if observations are found, there is secondary inspection, and we can't say exactly when we would sort of invite FDA back again, but we are working towards it, yes.
Okay, and is it fair to say that Copaxone filing is being done from here? And and that's what you've said a few times on the call, that because some of the injectables will get delayed. And second, are you looking to site switch it?
Copaxone is not from Dovada. There are other good assets which are in the process of site switching, but site switching has some timeline delays. So let's see which comes through earlier, and we'll see.
optimistically we expect to have FDA come in by the year end, December or so.
Okay, and just one last question. In the context of complex generics, can you update us the progress with the patches? How many you're working on and what's the sort of filing targets?
Very significant, Samir. I mean, there are, there was one which we are a little delayed. There is one still alive which we have settled and maybe Q2 next year, but these wouldn't really move revenues much. I think we are still banking a lot on injectable products filed both from our side and the partner side.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Sayan Mukherjee from Nomura Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. On this cost cut and restructuring, is it possible to share like which business areas this would really come from? And which line items? Are you talking about R&D, employee cost? Any color you can give on this?
So it's a little too early to share such details, but it is we'll consider global R&D sites, R&D expenses, manufacturing network, portfolio where we don't have enough margins from rationalization of portfolio, a number of different activities. So at this point, it's too preliminary to share that level of detail.
But you think it should come through next year or it will take longer for realizing these savings?
We should start seeing impact from next year onwards and some impact from this year also.
Okay. Okay, thank you. I'll jump back with you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Chirag Talati from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thanks for taking my question. Firstly, is it fair to say that this quarter has not seen any impact from price erosion on Desitabine from the new competitor?
Some, yeah.
That would be marginal in overall context of things.
To an extent, yes.
Secondly, if you can help us understand on your Suboxone product, is there any pending CRL if there is so, what are the timelines for refiling?
We submitted the response on the complete response letter. Now what we are awaiting the judgment, maybe 4 to 8 weeks, it's in litigation. The outcome is important for this asset. Of course, either way, this can be, if the generics win, innovator can challenge and vice versa. But that's the next important milestone. On the development front, I think we have, we feel very good about it.
If I can just kind of ask as a follow-up, when was the last response submitted to the FDA?
Yes, when? June, I guess. Yeah, June.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Girish Bakru from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just similar question on NuvaRing. Has the CRL been responded on that?
Yes, around the same time. And this is cleaner on the litigation front. We have stat dates on both Suboxone and NuvaRing in around Q4 of this financial year. So we'll see where it goes.
On the litigation front, there is an appeals case going on, if I understand, although that's on the activist CNDA, but you don't see that that should be, delaying it anyway beyond April 2018, right?
You're talking of NuvaRing, is it?
Yeah.
The expires in April of next year in any case.
Right. Abhijit, any color on, how soon you will see competition in this product? Would it be like 3 year no competition?
Those are difficult questions to answer. This is a certainly difficult questions to answer. I wouldn't know. There is another asset we heard that is in development, but these are complex assets. I mean, in terms of development, FDA may ask questions and been asked us as well, although we feel good about our development, but we'll see. Difficult to say about others.
Right. And on Copaxone again, when are we ready to refile 40 mg?
Very soon, in a couple of weeks.
And just a follow-up on that, if this decision on twin...
You're talking of the response to the CRL, right? I mean, the updation of this thing. Yeah,
couple of weeks. So if I understand, the TAD on 20 mg is close, and if you get positive response, I mean, after approval on that, would it make you confident on 40 mg as well, or do you think these two are kind of separately linked?
So firstly, we have a TAD, but these are extremely complex assets. So naturally, they may not be CRLs, but they would be certainly questions, you know, and could be, other CRs as well. I don't know. I mean, although we think we have done a reasonably good job, but so to assume that everything is done is certainly optimistic. But let's see. If the questions are not significant, I agree that then that gives certainly a directional signal towards the whole effect, because there's not much in the formulation side. It's actually the DMS, which is the same, and the review of that is more critical.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Kartik Mehta from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So just if we have to look at the gross margin, which is there for the last 2-3 years, it has come off from about 60% to now around between 50-53%. Is there a reason where there is a structural issue where we believe that since we are using third parties to manufacture or there is higher competition, is it fair to assume that this now remains here, or is there any scope for improvement? I just wanted your thought on this.
There's certainly room for improvement. The primary reason it has gone down is also because of the price competition. And as we launch newer assets with higher margins, the gross margin can go up. Our cost initiatives should also help us. And if you look at the current quarter, there is some one-time stuff also happening there. So
yeah,
I think gross margin should go up.
Your question about
manufacturing third party, would that erode? I don't think that's a very significant factor. It's not a cost which can really change the economics of our business model.
Sure. And if we have to look at the cost saving which you spoke about, would that and you entering into other markets, would M&A be a part of it? Because we're pretty low on debt, and if we have to make an entry into any of the larger emerging markets with the pipeline that you have, would that be something that you consider?
Largely, we are looking at not inorganic entry, because we are looking at institutional sales as the vehicle for entry into these emerging markets. We don't require large sales forces or establishments. So I don't think we really need to do inorganic growth to expand our footprint in the markets that we're considering today. But if there's a good opportunity, we will not be shy of that.
No, I meant in the markets where you are not there now, maybe some other markets in Europe,
In Europe, we already entered the big five markets. We have two markets where we're selling products for a long time, and we've established a presence in three other markets. So we don't really need to do anything inorganic.
Yeah, and on Doxil, just this one. So how do we record your the revenue and the profit, given that we have a partner, and so that would just help in terms of the margins that could flow in the next quarters. Thanks.
Yeah, so it is a significant asset. It is, certainly without giving a specific number, it's a significant asset, and we are the dominant partner in the partnership. So based on that, you'll have to sort of work things out.
Yeah, so I just actually wanted to know that, do we record the revenue upfront and then there is a profit share, or, I mean, so how is it recorded? I don't want to...
We book full revenue.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Aditya Khemka from DSP BlackRock. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thanks for the opportunity. So what would be the product concentration now in the U.S. business for us? I mean, would the top five products account for 30, 40, 50% of our sales? Just a ballpark number.
It has reduced over the years. Right now, I think, if you take, comparative figure, we are lower than quite a few peer group companies if you take the first two, three assets, take it for things.
Top five.
But, the figure which I have readily available is top two assets.
Top five would be around 25%.
Yeah.
Okay, that's helpful. And so just wanted to verify one number. Chauvin mentioned that Q-on-Q because of azacitidine and one more asset he mentioned. For these two products, the price erosion has been about $11 million Q-on-Q?
No. There's G-Vidaza and G-Valside, I said.
Yes.
So between that, yes.
Okay, and that was a sequential number, right?
That was a QOQ.
QOQ, okay. Yeah, I just wanted to check that. Thank you. And just one last question on, your take on the Bachupali Form 483. Have we seen any product approvals since the Form 483 has been issued from Bachupali? And if not, then is it fair to say that it is an OAI status with the FDA?
The only one which is pending, we mentioned, I think, last time, is atomoxetine. I think it's premature to conclude anything. I think we have responded adequately. There was just one follow-up question out of many observations, which we have also responded. So we'll see where it goes.
Any timelines discussed with the FDA on Bachupali, or is just something that you have to wait for and see what the FDA does?
Timelines, we have responded. So as I said, the response was sent. There was one clarification on one specific point. We have responded that as well. So
when was this response, sir?
Last one was about a month back, I guess, roughly give or take. We'll come back to you. Month back, maybe, or about 15 days back or something. I think 15 days.
Okay, fine. I'll get back in touch. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Nitin Agarwal from IDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. So on, you alluded a couple of times about this emerging market strategy. Can you just help us understand a bit in terms of the potential of if there are some illustrative examples of what is the kind of potential some of these assets have, relevant U.S. assets have, when you sort of take them on a pan-global footprint of sorts?
It's significant. I think, I would maintain what I said in the earlier calls. I think we are betting on this institutional strategy and leveraging of assets globally. We are getting into Brazil as we speak, into Q2, and we have three approvals, three products also getting launched. Q3 may see a couple of more approvals. These are big markets, smaller markets like Colombia and ASEAN markets. Biosimilars are, taking, gaining more momentum. So overall, it's not something which will be a quick one quarter type of thing, but we're doing it systematically, leveraging these assets globally in these markets, putting the footprint just what is needed, because it is not, while it's B2B, but it is needing our contact with the clinics and all that. So we will be deep into these markets, understanding how exactly each of these, you know, clinics sort of operate on this area, in this area. And hence, it's a significant involvement, focus, which will bear results, I guess, in next 2 to 3 years.
Okay. So you think it's going to be a couple of years before it starts to show up meaningfully in the numbers?
Well, yeah, true, but we will start seeing something even this year itself. Meaningful, meaning what is meaningful? You know, I mean, for us, even 5 to 10 million is meaningful if we can, you know, get going.
Okay. And so secondly, on the, you know, on the distribution angle, distribution consolidation, you know, the which is angle, what's your experience, I mean, sense on that part of the business? I mean, obviously, the price erosion in the business is a combination of the asset erosion because of competition. But if you were to see, if there's a way to sort of dissect that, so what is the distribution consolidation-driven, you know, price erosion, which is probably a little more sustainable, normal going forward in your assessment?
Not sure I understood your question. You are aware of the consolidation. There are three players, right? ClaraSwan, Redoc, and you know, Walgreens, Econdesk, AmerisourceBergen combination. So, so what's the specific question?
So I'm saying, you know, we've had erosion in the business on account of compression in our key assets, as well as pressure which is brought about by the consolidation of the distribution consolidation. So, you know, is there a way to sort of segregate the two in terms of the erosion which is being brought about by the consolidation process, or and how do you see that playing forward?
It's very difficult to answer your question in terms of numbers because it's very asset specific. It depends on the number of competitors for the given asset and so on and so forth. But it's very difficult to give a general answer. But it is the fact that price erosion is higher than what it used to be because of the high concentration of market share among these three players. So anybody who has a market share will hang on to it for a long time. And to dislodge that, you need a bigger discount, and that is where this price erosion is coming from.
Got it. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Shyam Srinivasan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. The first is on Alloxy. Is there any update on the launch of this product?
The 5-5-B2, I think, you know, we have a challenge, the lower court decision, so that's one aspect. But the more happening one today is the 5-5-J one, which is being fought by one company, and a few of us, a couple of us are watching that closely. There, I think the innovator has asked for end-bank hearing, and the generic company is responding to it. So in summary, I think the verdict on that we would see in give or take 8 weeks, within 8 weeks or around 8 weeks from now. A positive, then it moves ahead. Negative, then it goes into hearing, which is a little long term. You know, maybe another 7-8 months. So,
and your settlement with the innovator lets you launch with this generic company, with Teva, perhaps, if all goes well.
You make your own, you're tracking it closely, so that you know, you can have your guess.
Sure, thank you. My second question is on the new FDA commissioner, not new anymore, Dr. Scott Gottlieb. He's talking about more generics being on the market and priority reviews for the first generic on the market. So there has been a lot of talk, but have you seen any walking the talk kind of a thing? So do you foresee, you know, more complex generic approvals or limited competition approvals in the next 6-12 months?
Yeah, look, I think firstly, it's difficult to sort of expect immediate action. We are very excited about his comments, and very, very, very forward-looking in the right direction, and I think we welcome that a lot. So, and he's, you know, talking a few very sort of apt and relevant issues. And so let's see. One the positive change which has come in is in terms of prioritized expedited review. Earlier was just one generic. It has been extended. It's been increased till three generics are approved. So quite a few assets are coming into expedited, which is a good move. And then the rest we will see as it unfolds, actually. But overall comments are in absolutely right direction.
Okay. Thank you. And my last question is on your R&D. What levels should we be assuming for the rest of the year? It's at 15% first quarter. And where is the incremental kind of R&D going into? Is it going to more clinical trials? If you can give any color, that will be useful. Thank you.
Instead of it taking as a percentage, because, you know, the sales, there is a wide fluctuation, the percentage changes tremendously. I think we should take R&D will be in the vicinity of 500 crores per quarter, take, 10-20 crores plus minus.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Alok Dalal from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, guys. Just one question. Mr. Prasad, how do you measure R&D productivity in the company, and how has it progressed over the last few years? Has it declined? Has it gone up? Thank you.
So we look at the NPV of assets. We look at the money we spend and the NPV of the pipeline that we deliver. There has been some fluctuation in the last 2-3 years. It can't be a very smooth year-on-year curve. The last year has been a good year. We hope to continue that this year too. So the numbers themselves, the number of filings, while they are not as high as some of our competitors, we believe the kind of assets we have will justify the productivity of the assets. So we have complex assets, and then we have simple assets. We have the blend. So overall, it's difficult to have a number beyond an NPV number that we calculate internally.
Yes, this is helpful. Sir, when do you expect the R&D to get monetized? Because the problem is that the R&D spend is hitting your P&L, but the assets have not yet come, maybe for multiple reasons. So when do you think whatever you've spent on R&D so far, is it a 2-3 year cycle or is it beyond that?
I think in the next 2-3 years, we should see significant growth in the company, which will unlock the R&D investments that we made.
Sir, just going back in time, you had a vision of $3 billion by FY13. Do you think you will realize that in the next 3 years?
We hope so.
In the next 3 years, it could be even more.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Due to time constraints, we will take the last question from the line of Anmol Ganju from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. My first question is to Mr. Prasad. Mr. Prasad, you spoke about this initiatives around costs. I know, it's too early to get into details, but as you embark on your initiative to purge costs, what are the strategic areas, what are the areas which you think are non-focused and non-strategic, and what will come under your crosshairs first as you move to purge costs?
So we are not looking at divesting or cutting any businesses. So the businesses won't get impacted. But there's a significant amount of, inefficiencies due to the way we've grown over the years. And we've never stepped back and looked at our networks, where we are spending, what we are getting out of them. And we did that exercise recently, and we found significant scope for tightening everywhere without impacting outcomes. And we believe that we can achieve that in the next 2-3 years, a very significant saving over our operating base.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. My second question is that you spoke about, whatever approvals we've gotten this quarter, they peak only in subsequent couple of quarters. If you look at this quarter, the impact of the scale-up of the market share thus far, how far would be we with respect to just these three assets from our peak? So this quarter contains an impact of what, 40% of peak, 50% of peak. if you can just help us understand that, that will be helpful.
You're talking about the new launches?
Yes. So you said
new launches. New launches is a small portion. I mean, first quarter it doesn't make a very very big impact. I mean, it's not zero, but it's not that significant. You know.
No, that's not what I meant. What I meant was that in terms of the peak sales potential of these three launches,
yeah, okay.
How far are we? Are we 40%?
No. So in Q2, let's not talk of Q1. Q2, I think at least the two major assets, I think we would almost get there. Lycodox may slightly spill to Q3, slightly spill to Q3. But by Q2, these assets will, the run rates we should get.
Okay.
So, except for Lycodox. Givitorin is almost there. Lycodox being an institutional asset and sometimes there's channel loading, so it takes a little bit of time. But our market share of this asset is very good. I mean, so I think it will scale up by, certainly by end Q2, early Q3.
Market share. And my last question is, if I may, that you sounded optimistic that, you know, we will be restocking fairly soon and as far as India is concerned. But if we look at a full year basis, you know, I know it's early yet, but what's your assessment that on a full year basis, what is the prognosis of India market this year? Is the lost sales for this quarter going to be compensated in subsequent quarters? And to that extent, do you think GST is a neutral event from an India growth trajectory standpoint? Or what are your thoughts around that?
Okay, let me try and answer this. Early at the moment, but you know, as we have seen the momentum coming back in July, and we are, I think we are reasonably satisfied. So given that, I'm not sure this would be a very significant derailer, I mean, in terms of India business. So let's see how the economy unfolds, and it's still possible for growth to be in reasonable range, high single digit, low double digit type of thing.
Okay. Thank you. That was my last question. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraints, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Shaunak Savla for closing comments.
Thank you all for joining the call. And in case if you have any additional clarifications, please feel free to get in touch with the investor relations team. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Dr. Reddy's Laboratories Limited, that concludes this conference call for today. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.